go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5. Patriots Playbook. 51 mirror.
And the rest of the
2007
NFL season.
Stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
We're here, kids, for a Thursday inside the playbook. We welcome you once again to Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. It is week 13. Patriots getting ready for game 12 and a chance to move to 12-0 against the Baltimore Ravens on Monday night, M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. Now, today on the program, as we normally do on Thursdays, first of all, your emails. Got to get to those right off the bat. So, do the Patriots return to the running up the score ways, or does Baltimore make this game closer than the current 20.5-point spread that I saw in the newspaper today? Send us your score predictions and give me your thoughts on what happens on Monday night. Again, do the Patriots return to their running up the score ways, or do the Ravens make it closer than that 20.5-point spread? Webradio at Patriots.com is how you reach us, as always, webradio at Patriots.com. So fire off your score predictions and your thoughts on Monday night's game here in the early going, because coming up on the program, we have more locker room chit-chat for you today. We'll get into the Patriots locker room like we did yesterday. We're back at it again today to give you some more. We'll hear from some of the Patriots players a little bit later on in the program. We'll also have the Baltimore Ravens conference calls, specifically with Brian Billick, their head coach, also later in the program. And as he always does on Thursdays, Russell Baxter from ESPN, their NFL research coordinator. He is going to join us as he does on Thursdays to look at the Pats and, of course, the Ravens, since it is the Monday night game on ESPN. And, of course, we'll take a look at Week 13 elsewhere around the NFL. Very quickly, after we left you yesterday, Asante Samuel, to the surprise of no one, was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week for the Pats. He had three tackles, three passes defense, two picks, one return for a touchdown, as the Patriots solidified their clinching of the AFC East last week and improved to 11-0, all told this year. Let's see what else. His first return for a touchdown of the season, the third of his career in the regular season. He has six total. It is Samuel's second Player of the Week award. He did it also in Week 12, somewhat ironically, in 2006, same week. He's the second Patriots defensive player to win the Defensive Player of the Week award. Mike Vrabel won it back in Week 8. So Asante Samuel named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week for his performance in the Patriots' 31-28 win over the Eagles on Sunday. Nothing else tremendous of note to pass on news and note-wise. We did sort of recap a lot of numbers for you yesterday, some of the bench watermarks that the Patriots are getting ready to embark upon. So today, looking at it again, I'm just kind of, you know, like banging the rumor mill a little bit. I want to see what's out there about these guys and whether or not there's any lingering effect from not only Spygate, but, you know, I guess we could call Sunday night Blueprint Gate. Whether or not teams are now able to get a real feel for how to beat the Patriots based on what the Eagles did this last Sunday. I mean, whatever you want. I just wanted to kind of test the water. And there's a couple of places that I go around the Internet to kind of test and see how people are feeling and what people are thinking. And I came across an interesting article today from USA Today. I don't know if you saw this, but Jarrett Bell wrote a story. And I don't know, maybe there are, I get the sense here, kids, just off the bat here, I get the sense that there are writers now whose specific sole job is to dig up stuff. I don't know if it's specifically to dig up stuff on the Patriots or just to stir the pot, you know, just to find stories that are offbeat, off center, off key, you know, out of the ordinary. I'm or because the Patriots have, you know, this newly found bad boy image in the NFL because they're winning And because of the whole Spygate thing, I seem to think that there are some national publications out there and some probably of the larger dailies in this country that probably say, all right, you know what? Keep digging. Let's see what else we can find on these guys, because this makes for good reading. This makes for good stories. This makes for interest, high interest. I can't say that if I were a managing editor of a particular newspaper like USA Today that I wouldn't say the same thing, to be honest with you, because everybody, you know, everybody's been buzzing about the Pats this year. And so it's kind of like, all right, let's find stuff to see if we can't continue that buzz. You know, it makes us popular. It makes our reporters readable. It makes people buy our newspaper. Well, okay, I understand that. I just wonder, when do we go too far? Isn't news supposed to happen and then we report the news? Not anymore. Now, every major publication has an investigative person, and many of them in the sports world as well, that go out there to make the phone calls, to do the diligent work, to dig up stuff, as I say. I don't know if that's right or wrong. It's just part of the culture now, I think. Anyway, that's why we attach the word gate, G-A-T-E, to the end of just about everything that seems to happen somewhat controversially nowadays. Anyway, USA Today, Jarrett Bell. I'm going to read just a couple of clips from his story today in case you did not get a chance to see it. And then I want your opinions on this today. He says, Dalis Thomas knowingly glanced at the large digital clock mounted on a wall near a corner doorway in the Patriots locker room early this week and carefully inspected the designer watch on his wrist. Nope, mine isn't synchronized. Mine is faster than that. Thomas, the Swift's army knife of a linebacker in his first season with the Patriots after 7 years with the Ravens, is nobody's fool. It didn't take him long to realize how costly a few seconds can be in an environment where digital clocks are ubiquitous and his teammates are so eager to lay down the law. That's part of the Patriots culture. The players enforce some of the rules. For any given meeting, several veterans are poised to pounce on a teammate who might be a tad tardy. Teddy Bruschi is quoted as saying, it's a game within a game. We're clock watchers. You'd be amazed at how many people can come in that door before the clock hits and you've got 20 seconds left. Even if you're late by 10 seconds, we get the number. These atomic clocks around here, I've got a synchronized watch. Some of the DBs have synchronized watches. I've heard where some teams let a guy walk in late and they'll say, try to be on time next time. Not here. Everyone holds everyone accountable. All right, well, so far, I'm into this, right? It's great that I think the Patriots players are holding themselves accountable. Bill Belichick doesn't have to do that. The coaching staff doesn't have to do that. The ownership doesn't have to do that. The Patriots players themselves hold themselves accountable inside the confines of the locker room. All right, so that's good. Nothing wrong there, right? All right, well, here's what Mr. Bell from USA Today digs up. And then we get a little fire set to it by ProFootballTalk.com today. And I'm curious to know your reaction. First of all, have you seen it? Second of all, what's your reaction to it? The USA Today story says the collective bargaining agreement between NFL players and the league sets limits on how much players can be fined for various transgressions. Player can be docked as much as $400 a pound for being overweight, but no more than twice a week. Being late for curfew, late for practice, late for a meeting, late for the bus, or late for a visit with a trainer can cost as much as $1,500. And the cost for losing a playbook can go as high as $8,000. Gary, can we lose this playbook here, by the way? As long as that gets me $8,000, right? Yeah, exactly. You don't mind then, right?
We can split it.
Thanks. Yet Patriots players handle some matters themselves, including punctuality, without the issue being settled on Coach Bill Belichick's desk. Bruschi says this became the practice about 2000. He remembers since-departed linebacker Willie McGinnis having a hand in instituting the enforcement. Bruschi says, you don't want your fine sent into the head coach. All right. So far, I think I'm still following it here. Dante Stallworth, a six-year receiver in his first year with the Pats after previously playing for Philadelphia and New Orleans, says it's been easy to fall in line. There's a lot of credibility in the room, given the three Super Bowl wins in the past six seasons and the current 11-0 mark that gives the Patriots a shot at becoming the second team in NFL history to achieve a perfect season. The quote from Stallworth is, Bill doesn't have many rules, but his main one is, put the team first. And if something is coming from Teddy Bruschi, Rodney Harrison, or Troy Brown, and they've been in the NFL for 102 years, you got to respect what they say. All right, good. I'm buying this. I'm into this now, right? So when's the shoe going to drop? Well, Jarrett Bell says on USA Today, some infractions can occur in the practice field, and some are strictly for a specific position group. Defensive end Richard Seymour says D linemen can get hammered for missing a technical assignment within the defensive scheme. He says the players and the coaches keep track of the violations. And then some of the players might remind the coaches that somebody was in the wrong gap. Seymour says, if we see something on the film, you don't want to be that guy, but it's all done in good nature. Everybody kind of laughs about it. It adds to the competitive environment. The money collected from the fines goes into a pot, Bruschi and Seymour said, that is dispersed after the following game. In the defense's case, the cash is typically awarded to the player who comes up with the first turnover. So Seymour jokes, we want a guy to be late to get that pot up. And messing up a technique in practice? He says that's a demerit. More money in the pot. So, in Sunday night's win against Philadelphia, cornerback Asante Samuel returned an interception for a 40-yard touchdown in the opening possession of the game. Seymour said Asante got a nice little stash. That's his quote. Well, according to the story, players won't reveal exactly how much was in the pot last week, but Bruschi said that it was subject to dispute. A player, whom Bruschi would only identify as a veteran, was late for a meeting and disagreed on how much money was to be docked. Veteran players, including team captains, huddled and set the amount. How late was he? Well, that was the dispute, Bruschi said. How many minutes was he late and how much should he put in the pot? The contentions were aired over several days. It wasn't resolved until Saturday, Bruschi said. You ride him and ride him, whether the humor or little jabs, you want to keep the banter going and make sure he realizes that we all know that he wasn't there. That sends a message to the younger guys that no matter who you are, what year you were in the league, or how many years you've been here, you are held accountable. Bruschi laughed when he asked if he's ever been fined. Absolutely, he said. I've been here over 12 years. I've been a minute or two late for a meeting at times, but it's a science. See this clock over here? Every clock in here ticks to the same time. When you step in that door, if you're 3 seconds late, bam, you get an eruption from the peanut gallery and your name on the board. Asked about Samuel's haul from Sunday, Bruschi said, quote, it was a good pot. And then the final line of this story. One problem. It's also a violation of NFL policy. But that's an issue for someone else to police. So, I'm kind of like, I'm kind of left hanging here. Then why do you do the story? It seems like you're doing the story just to put it out there in public, right? For everybody to pass judgment on. Why not continue the story and get a quote from the NFL? Why not continue the story and find out, well, how much of a violation of policy is it? By the way, what is the NFL policy that they are violating here? That's the problem that I have with Mr. Bell and the particular article in that is in the paper in USA Today. Well, then let's take this a step further. ProFootballTalk.com, one of my favorite places to go to on the net, besides Patriots.com, of course. He said, this Michael Smith, who posted this earlier. In fact, he posted this earlier this afternoon. He says, we noted earlier this week that the NFL has decided not to take any action against the Green Bay Packers after some defensive backs offered cash rewards to the defensive line for shutting down opposing running backs. The NFL did, however, remind the Packers that such rewards are against the NFL's rules, which prohibit any form of bounties. To repeat, the rule in question states, clubs and players are prohibited from offering or accepting bonuses to a player for his team's performance against a particular team, a particular opposing player, or players in a particular group of an opposing team. Well, this is what Jarrett Bell of USA Today is reporting that the Patriots are violating this rule. Clubs and players are prohibited from offering or accepting bonuses to a player for his or his team's performance against a team, a player, or a group of players on an opposing team. Bell notes, of course, it's a violation of league rules. And given the precedent that with the Packers set, the Patriots most likely won't face any sort of league discipline, but they will be told to, quote, knock it off. What do you think? What are your thoughts? Should something that is in the confines of a team locker room in particular be, you know, subject to, I don't know, the high and mighty hand of the National Football League? Now, granted, apparently the Patriots players don't look at this as a bounty per se, and quite frankly, I don't think it is either. I don't think it falls under that category, which is where I think Jarrett Bell of USA Today misses the point. This is not a bounty. You don't have incentive for going out and making a play. In a sense, I guess you do, because they say, well, you've got all this money that's collected from fines, being late from meetings, what have you, and then the first player that, you know, makes a play like that, you know, creates a turnover, gets a turnover, is going to get the pot. Maybe in a sense that gives them incentive, small as it might be, because I'm sure that the pot overall is not exactly, you know, the same as a weekly paycheck, but who knows? I guess, you know, if it adds up over a few weeks, then maybe it's a decent pot. But it gives them incentive to go out and try to make a play. But it doesn't give them incentive to go out and make a play against a particular team or individual. It just happens to be the next team on the schedule. So I guess that what we need from the NFL, and what we really should have had happen in the story, but the reporter, again, falls well short, I think, of, you know, his journalistic duty here. What constitutes a bounty? And does what the Patriots do within their own, you know, little, you know, circle in the locker room, does that constitute a rules violation? And why are we digging this? Why are we asking about this anyway? What was the point? First of all, how does a reporter from USA Today find out about this particular bounty, if that is what it is? Apparently, the Patriots players don't think there's anything wrong with it and that they're certainly not violating any kind of a rule. Why else would they be vocal about it? If someone asked them a question, why else would they describe it? If they were concerned that it might be a rules violation, if they felt like they were knowingly going up against a rule, don't you think they would have kept their mouths shut and said, I don't know what you're talking about? I find the whole thing rather curious. I find the whole thing just kind of makes me feel icky, for lack of a better phrase here. The whole thing smacks of just digging up dirt for the sake of dirt digging. So, you know, in your thoughts, I mean, if you get a chance, you can go look at USA Today, and Jarrett Bell is the reporter. If you want to go to ProFootballTalk.com and get the shortened version of what was going on, you can go to that as well. And I'd be curious to know how you feel about this particular issue. Are the Patriots violating a rule? Are they following the letter of the law? Are they bending the rules? Is this a bounty per se? I mean, I think a bounty is someone who specifically goes out to make a play on a particular person in order to reap a cash reward. I don't think what the Patriots are doing is a bounty. I mean, it's incentive to go make a play, but they're not aiming it against any particular player or team. It's just the next on the schedule. So I don't understand. I mean, a bounty is against a particular person, I think, and this reward, such as it is, isn't set automatically, like, okay, automatically the next play, automatically the next play, automatically the next play, or automatically the next team. Based on my reading into what the Patriots are doing in the locker room, based on my understanding of it all, is that, you know, this pot can basically add up over days and weeks before they decide, okay, now it's worth going after. And so I'm sure they'll make an announcement in the locker room amongst the guys that, all right, you know, whoever makes the first play this week's gonna get the dough. Well, fine. Doesn't mean that it happens every week. That means you can't target a specific team or person to go out and get the cash from. Maybe it's a bit of a stretch. Maybe it's much ado about nothing. It's entirely possible. But I just thought it curious that this kind of story gets brought up, first of all, to begin with. How would a guy like Jarrett Bell find this out unless somebody tipped him off? Because he's not in the locker room to know about it. Somebody had to tip the reporter off, whether it was a player or another member of the media or a coach or something. Somebody's got some inside knowledge that would have tipped this guy off. And so he decides to do a little digging. He asks a couple of the players. He asks Seymour. He asks Bruschi. And they say, yeah, sure, we do this to have, you know, fun, to keep guys accountable. We all know that the Patriots players love accountability. They thrive on it. You've heard the quotes. I've given you the quotes from the players. Guys like Dante Stallworth who are falling in line. Randy Moss falling in line. Guys in the past who have fallen in line. Corey Dillon, they've fallen in line. Why? Because this team does as good a job as any in all of professional sports of holding their veterans and all of their players accountable for their actions. Now, are mistakes made? Sure, absolutely. Every once in a while, we're all human. We all make mistakes. But this team has a system in place to make those mistakes mean something. Is that a bounty? I have a hard time with the word bounty as it consists in this particular instance. I don't think that's the proper word. The NFL does have a rule against bounties. I don't think they have a clause so much against, shall we say, rewards. And I think there are two different things here. It's obviously, I can see, right now as I even speak it, I can see why someone can make that reach. So I will give Jarrett Bell that particular benefit of the doubt. I can see why he would make that reach in trying to create the story. But I wonder why somebody would tip this off to him that this is happening unless they were just out to get the Patriots. And believe you me, because the Patriots are who they are, and we've seen this several times now throughout this, you know, so far record-setting season, somebody's out there that just is a real hater or real jealous, one or the other, and maybe a little bit of both. So what do you think? Webradio@patriots.com, again, is the email address, webradio@patriots.com. That's how you get us. If you'd like, you can call as well, 508-543-7482. That way I don't have to listen to myself talk all the time. You can do some of the talking. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. You can call in, and we'll take your phone call. Again, coming up in about 20 minutes, Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us around the NFL, NFL Research Coordinator for Week 13 around the league. We'll also hear from Brian Billick, Baltimore Ravens head coach today, and we'll get inside the Patriots locker room toward the end of the program as well. We'll let you hear from the guys themselves as they prepare for the Baltimore Ravens. I'm a little surprised that the spread is still 20.5 based on what we saw last week against the Eagles. Now, I don't think Baltimore has near the offense that Philadelphia does. You could make an argument, I suppose, that Baltimore has every bit the defense, if not better, than Philadelphia has, but certainly they don't have anywhere near the offense. This game is going to boil down to a couple of basic fundamental practices in football, whether or not the Patriots take care of the ball. That's number one. Will they shoot themselves in the foot with penalties and turnovers? Because if they do and they give Baltimore the short field to work with, then you could see where a defense like Baltimore could really come into play. The Baltimore offense is going to have help to beat the Patriots. I don't think that comes as, you know, brain surgery to anybody. But if you provide that offense that help and you put the defense, the Patriots defense, on its heels, well, then you could have very much another Sunday night. That's how it happens. That's how it works. And that's going to be the formula. That's going to be the quote-unquote blueprint for the rest of the season against any of these teams. You got to give the opposing defense a little help. And if you do, then it's going to be a game. If you take care of the ball, if you do what the Patriots did, where they have nine possessions on Sunday, and I think something like 73 offensive plays. I mean, you're talking about 8 to 9 plays per possession on average. That's extraordinary. I mean, that means they're churning out first downs, they're moving the football. It's an offense that's just darn near unstoppable. And as well as the defense may have played for the Eagles on Sunday night, they ultimately did not stop the Patriots. I mean, granted, they held them to 24 points, because 7 obviously were scored by Samuel on the interception return, which got him that nice little chunk of stash of cash that we were talking about. But you still didn't stop them. You still lost the game. Isn't that the bottom line, whether you win or lose? Nobody's remember how you played. It's just gonna, they're going to look back on it at the end of the year and say, yeah, you lost. That's it. So I'm a little surprised. I'm a little surprised that more money isn't moving on Baltimore, which would lower the odds in this particular instance. But maybe that's because there are others that feel like I do, that, you know, Baltimore's offense isn't anywhere near what Philadelphia's is. And therefore, the Patriots most likely are going to get back to their normal ways of doing things, which gets back to my original email question of the day as we opened up the show here half an hour ago. And the thought process is, all right, do the Patriots return to their running up the score ways? And I want you to predict the score for Monday night and send me your email, webradio@patriots.com. Got a couple of different things to talk about today. A couple of different things on the agenda. So I want you to think about your thoughts, okay? I want you to think about the story in USA Today and the Patriots' quote-unquote bounty, and that's their word, not mine. And whether or not you feel like somebody is trying to hoodwink the Pats, or if this is a legitimate concern. And as a fan of the Patriots, are you concerned that this team might be, I stress the term might be violating another NFL rule? Okay, there you go. Webradio@patriots.com. We're going to take a timeout. We'll come back with a couple of emails. We'll also get into Russell Baxter, and we'll get into the Baltimore Ravens and much more right here inside the Playbook.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything. Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yes, it is, in fact. It is a very wonderful time of year. We've got the holidays coming up. We've got playoffs, or, you know, the playoffs coming up. We've got regular season games that apparently matter, right? Well, there's a good game on tonight, too. It's just that many of you won't be able to watch it because it's on NFL Network. I don't know how you feel about that. We welcome back.
But I want to watch Brett Favre.
Brett Favre. Well, you know, here's the deal with that. It's on NFL Network tonight, Green Bay at Dallas. And we'll talk to Russell Baxter about this in a little bit. But quite frankly, if you are one of those that does not have NFL Network on your system, or you're not fortunate enough like me to have the dish, or have DirecTV in your home as well. I have DirecTV in particular, and absolutely don't know what I would do without it now that I've had it. Here's the deal. If you go to NFL.com tonight, all right, NFL.com is going to have what they call a supplemental broadcast of the Packers-Cowboys game tonight. They're going to have live look-ins. They'll have in-game highlights. They'll have live in-studio analysis and apparently a bunch of other stuff as well. Now, NFL.com did this very same thing with the Colts-Falcons game, which, of course, was the other Thursday night game last Thursday night on Thanksgiving. And the live stream apparently was very clean and very clear and very crisp. So if you don't get NFL Network, and if you're not interested in hanging out at a sports bar or wherever, or your buddy's house that, you know, may have the satellite dish at home, you can at least stay up to date in real time with the game tonight if you like, if you have a computer and an internet connection. And by the way, might I add, of course, once again, that the Patriots will be the Thursday night game on NFL Network in the season finale against the New York Giants. Now, you probably already knew that, but I feel like I should probably say something here as well, because you know that will be a story and it will be a point of contention with many of you when we get to week 17 and we get to the final week, and then we'll get a lot of emails here and probably all over the place, and it'll be the talk of talk shows all throughout New England. How come we can't see the Patriots? I'm telling you now, kids, all right, get yourselves ready for this. And if the Patriots are 15-0 and they have a chance now to make that 16-0 undefeated mark, you know you're going to want to see the game. It's not going to be on cable unless, of course, your cable system gives you the chance to watch NFL Network. So you can take matters into your own hands right now. And again, I don't work for the NFL. I don't have stock in NFL Network. I'm not Adam Schefter's best friend. He's been on this program as well, and, you know, obviously he's a reporter for NFL Network. But what I am telling you is that you can still do this on your own. I love NFL Network, and I usually watch a little bit of it every day. And the best part about NFL Network is that if I need a football fix in the off season, I can turn it on, and they're always doing something that I'm interested in. So if you're a football fan, this is the thing. This is the place you got to go. To be honest, they do a great job. And I tell you, if I didn't think they did a very good job, I love some of their stuff. I don't like some of their personalities because I think they're full of themselves, but I guess that kind of comes with the territory. But you should take matters into your own hands right now and call your satellite provider, call DirecTV, call Dish Network, whichever one you prefer, and say, all right, I need to get the Dish because I want NFL Network. And dump on your cable, and that's that. And it's going to take a lot of you to do that before some of these cable companies, Comcast in particular, decide to acquiesce and put this on a tier where, you know, you can get it. So there you go. Tonight will be a good test market for what could happen in the last week of the regular season, because I guess they're estimating now about 40 million football fans who would otherwise watch this game tonight, the Packers-Cowboys game tonight. About 40 million fans who would watch it if they could, but can't or won't because they do not receive NFL Network. How about that? 40 million. So don't get left out in the cold, and don't complain to us, and don't send us the email. How come that's not fair? How come I don't get it? I'm telling you now, okay? Now. Do it now. It's about a month or so away, guys. Month or so away here. So take matters into your own hands. If you really are that concerned about watching what could be a piece of NFL history that night when the Patriots take on the Giants, and you're going to complain that it's not on, you know, your cable system, take care of things and go get NFL Network and go get the Dish, and you'll be all set. That's basically what it boils down to. And like I said, if you're really cheap and if you're really a tightwad, first of all, shame on you. Why are you a football fan then? It's an expensive sport to be a fan of, number one. And number two, if you can't do it at this point in time, then like I said, NFL.com is going to have this supplemental deal where they'll have look-ins and they'll have some highlights while the game's going on, analysis and all that kind of stuff on NFL.com. So at least you can be up to date with the game as it's happening. All right, so there you go. That's the other point that I want to bring across today because, quite frankly, it's going to be a good test market tonight, I think. Very good test market. All right, let's get a couple of emails in here. Again, webradio@patriots.com. Need your predictions and your thoughts on Monday night, whether or not the Patriots get back to their, as I said earlier, quote-unquote, running up the score ways, or will this one also be close, in your estimation, based on what you saw this past Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles? Question number one. And question number two has to do with the USA Today story on Patriots players putting up a pot of cash for turnovers and whether or not that constitutes a bounty and whether or not you think the Patriots are violating an NFL rule stating that teams cannot do that. You go to USA Today and read the story. You can go to ProFootballTalk.com. and see them talking about that story, and that's why we bring it up today, because that's today's, I guess we'll call it bounty gate, for lack of another phrase, and what you think about it, and whether or not you think it's much ado about nothing, or is it legit, and should the Patriots do something about it? Or is it just a hater who's been tipped off on the Patriots, and somebody who I think has been assigned to dig up dirt on maybe the best pro football team ever, and maybe one of the best pro sports teams ever? All right, Scott in Washington says, John, one concern I have about Monday night is the Baltimore weather. Originally, the forecast was for rain, but now it's supposed to be cold and windy, with winds projected to be between 16 and 24 miles per hour. Sound like a meteorologist, Scott. Gusts like that could interfere with the Patriots' passing game, and that presents a wild card to predicting this game. If they can deal with the conditions, then I think the Patriots do have a very good chance to win big on Monday, especially against a team with a weak offense like Baltimore. He says, by the way, I live in the D.C. area, and I plan to attend Monday night's game, so I am paying close attention to the weather outlook. Scott, thank you. Appreciate that. Glad that you'll be there and glad that you'll be rooting on the Pats in that particular instance. I would say that if the winds are swirling, then, yeah, I would say that that obviously is going to keep you from, you know, trying to target things deep. I'm not so sure that's a defense that you want to do that on anyway, given the penchant for, you know, Ed Reed's presence being there and how, you know, Bill Belichick has lauded a lot of praise on him this week. So my guess would be you'd see, and guess what? Guess what? Jaws told us this here yesterday on this program, right? For those that may have missed it, Ron Jaworski was a guest yesterday before his national conference call. And again, exclusive to you, listeners here inside the playbook. And he said the very same thing. He said, you know what? I wouldn't be at all surprised to see the Patriots go with a Philadelphia-like game plan against the Ravens and their defense on Sunday. So it could be the same type of thought process going into the game on Sunday, where they're going to, you know, look to the middle, they're going to look short, that kind of thing, and they're, you know, maybe do some no-huddle, that kind of thing, to keep them from substituting packages and what have you. We'll see if that proves to be true anyway. Gabe in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Okay, so no one can beat the Pats. So let's beat them down and with scrounging around for some dirt. Well, if I get it straight, the head coach or front office would have to reward the player in order to violate a rule. But I didn't hear anything you said where it lists another player or group of players rewarding each other as a violation. Well, that's actually a good technicality there, Gabe. So he says, so where is the fire? I don't smell any smoke here. What a joke. What are these guys? What is this guy's credentials to create such a farce? Tell this guy to back to work for the bill, and let's turn the air down and the noise up. It's Polian news. Okay, good. All right, that's what I wanted. I wanted your opinion on this particular story. Thank you for that, Gabe. He also says, as for the Monday night game, I see Tom Terrific and the end zone gang back to their old ways, touchdowns, that is. And with an anemic offense and a banged-up defense, I'm looking for Pats 38, Ravens 9. All right, good stuff, Gabe. Excellent stuff. Good email. Way to go. That's firing it off. All right, let's go with this one that just came in. Joel in Merrimack, who says, Okay, I heard your show the other day, and you mentioned that two fans questioned Randy Moss. Well, I was at my buddy's house watching the Philly game, and he pointed out that on several of the replays, it showed Randy kind of petering out at the end of several crossing patterns. He was notorious for doing this in Oakland. Understandably, no sane receiver in the NFL likes taking hits across the middle. It's notoriously where safeties tee off on wide receivers. But if you don't completely sell the route, and he leaves it open. He says, oh, my God, what are we doing with Chad B? Geez, why not Monty B? I hope you guys know that's a joke. Don't know where Eric A is or Pierre W, but let me tell either of those that isn't preferable over Chad Brown. I really think Bill Belichick is going to play a lot more 4-3 and use Chad only if necessary. Like you guys said, if Chad Brown is on the field, we're hurting. I also think that's to be the case, and that's why I brought it up the other day. Joel, I think that because of the personnel sets now and because of the depth situation changing with Roosevelt Colvin's injury, that I think that the Patriots may be more suited now to play more 4-3, even though they prefer the 3-4. And he says, guys, stop hyping Pittsburgh. They lost to the Jets for crying out loud, and they squeaked by the Dolphins. And don't give me that poor field excuse. It's not the first time they've played at Heinz Field in poor conditions. They couldn't run the ball. Parker didn't do much, and every time Davenport touched the ball, he was being dropped in the backfield. Worthlessberger has been sacked 16 times in the last three games, thrown three touchdowns and three picks. Talking about a deer in the headlights. Okay, fodder. Lawrence Maroney, Chad Jackson, Brandon Merriweather. Troy is back, so all is well again. Rosie is gone. Hey, he wasn't really doing much this season anyway. Is Seymour still getting virtually double-teamed? Yeah, I'd say that that's pretty much the case. Keep in mind, though, when I mentioned this yesterday to someone who was complaining, you know, how come Seymour is still invisible out there? He's just now kind of getting out of his preseason, guys. So he's pretty much, you know, starting his year, and you think he might be hitting his stride by about the time the playoffs start. And I think that's a good sign for all things Patriot. He says, overall, we're still the best team in the NFL, and after watching too many mediocre poor years, I will take it. Lastly, as for who we should play in the Super Bowl, Dallas, of course. Wade Phillips has been cut in the mold of Mike Martz, and you got to love that. They lost it their way. He says, P.S., let's lock Belichick and Phillips in a room and make them play Madden 08 for the Super Bowl. Yeah. I wonder who wins that matchup. All right, Joel, thank you for that email. Let's sneak another one in here, and then we'll have Russell Baxter join us here in just a couple of minutes. Irene, what time is he joining us? He's joining us at 3. Thanks. Irene in Tampa says, John, pardon me if you already spoke about this, but isn't this bounty situation similar to the one that happened in Green Bay? If I am not mistaken, the NFL had no problem with whatever went on there. Yeah, and in fact, Irene, that's exactly what ProFootballTalk.com was talking about, that that it was somewhat similar to what happened in Green Bay, but because of what happened in Green Bay, let's see. I think I've got the latest on this right here, if you give me a minute. Yes, they did not take any action on the Packers for some defensive backs offering cash rewards to the defensive linemen for shutting down running backs. Sounds like a little competition within the competition. So, to me, what the Patriots players may be doing here is more like what the Packers did than, say, putting out a bounty on somebody's head. So I don't know why the Patriots would be singled out any differently than the Packers players would have been for a similar story. And that's a very good point by you, Irene. She also says, it just seems to me that this year has been one of defending the Pat's honor no matter what they do or don't do. It's getting ridiculous in the kinds of issues that are being raised by the media and fans of other football teams. I love to just watch the team play without all the commentary from ESPN, SI, Fox, etc. I can only hope they do run up the score on Monday. I love that stuff. All right, Irene, thank you for the email. Good stuff. That's right there. It's right there on the mark. It's good perspective. I don't know. What do you think? Do you still think that maybe this would qualify as a bounty? If so, is it violating any rules? Is it violating the spirit of the game? Or, you know, let me ask you this, I'm going to make a general assumption here, because I think if you're a football fan, I mean a diehard football fan, you have played football at some point in time in your life. Maybe, you know, if you're female, if you haven't played football, maybe you've played other sports. I'm going to suggest that not everyone, not all, but the majority of football fans have played sports before, whether you were younger or for recreation or what have you. You've gone out and you've enjoyed. That being said, you do things all the time for incentive. You know, you talk about it with your teammates or your friends or what have you. And, hey, if you make this play, you know, I'll buy you a beer after. That kind of stuff goes on all the time. So why shouldn't the guys in the hallway, in the locker room down the hallway, have the same right to have that kind of fun as we do? Why shouldn't they? Because it's a business? Well, okay, I'd love to have somebody try to explain that to me. Why should they be regulated for every little thing they do when all it will really do is just kind of suck the fun and the enjoyment out of the game? And like I said, it's up to a team to self-motivate. What you're doing here is if you're going to enforce things like this particular issue with the Patriots and this so-called incentive clause, what you're doing is you're taking away the few opportunities that teams have to gain edges for themselves. Why would you want a bunch of mindless drones playing out on the field, participating out on the field? You don't. Why would you? Personalities are what sell the game. I've said this a couple of times this year. I have said it more than a couple of times, and I'll continue to say it. Dynasties are good for sports. Pick a sport. I'll give you a dynasty, and I'll tell you whether or not it was good or bad. And I guarantee you every instance will be good.
The Yankees.
It's good for baseball. I may not like the Yankees, but it's good for baseball as a sport. Why? Because you either love them or you hate them. But you don't ignore them, do you? The very fact, Gary, that you brought up the Yankees tells me that, you know, you're fixated on the Yankees. And so because of that, well, you know, that's good for baseball because the Yankees happen to be a baseball team. It creates interest. That's what it does. It keeps interest. You're either interested in them and how much more they can win, or you're interested in them because you want them to get beat so bad you can taste it. Dynasties are good for sports. And the Patriots' dominance right now is good for the NFL, just like the Packers of the 60s, the Steelers of the 70s, the Niners of the 80s, and the Cowboys of the 90s into 2000. It's they're absolutely, absolutely good for the sport. That's why college football seems so much better when Notre Dame is good, when the traditional powers like Nebraska and Oklahoma and USC and Alabama, teams like that, are all good every year. And college football seems to be missing a little something when the dynasties, when the teams that have the reputations, the big-timers, aren't good. You're missing a little something. I mean, face it, we had a wild and wacky year in college football this year, one that is as crazy as I can ever remember covering and being a part of. And I realize to many people that's a wonderful thing. That's a great thing. You just don't know on any given week, yada, yada. And that's good stuff. We would have had more order to the season, without a doubt, if there were a dominant team, and if one of those dominant teams happened to be a big-name program. Right now, you've got two teams that have never played in this rarefied air of national championship talk. They've never played for a title before. They are poised to play in the BCS championship game in Missouri and West Virginia. Missouri still has to get by one of those dynasties, Oklahoma. And if they can do that this weekend of the Big 12 Championship, then Missouri gets to play for all the marbles. So, I'm thinking overall that just because the dynasty situation, because dominant teams are good overall, that, you know, this is just a part of the process, that teams are going to take pot shots at the Pats, are going to take pot shots at any team that wins. I mean, teams take pot shots at the Yankees all the time. Teams take pot shots and have taken pot shots for years at the Celtics, and of course it lost its fun several years ago when the Celtics started going downhill. The fact that they haven't won a championship in 21 years now, it's kind of like, all right, been there, done that. And there's a whole generation of basketball fans that don't know about the Celtics dynasty. They don't remember, and they've never in their lifetime had the Celtics, or at least in their conscious lifetime, ever had the Celtics as one of the good teams. Now, of course, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals a few years ago, but, I mean, even then, I think even longtime observers realized that, you know, they weren't going anywhere. But now that they're back, this is kind of new to people. Dynasties are good. Do you think otherwise? I'd love to hear from you. Webradio at patriots.com if you think otherwise. And if you have any other comments about the bounty situation, and of course, still got to get your predictions in for Monday's game. I realize it's a little far off. It's a little far off. Can't do anything about the schedule. That's the way that works. But I want you to start kind of turning your attention to that because, honestly, before the season started, this was a game that we all had earmarked on the calendar as a potential L. Let's face it, when you opened up the year and you saw the Patriots' schedule, one of the first things you did was you went down the list. Win, 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 loss, win, win, loss, win, loss, 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 win, 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 loss. You go down the list and you think, all right, you know, they'll win this one, they'll lose this one. Everybody plays that game when the schedule first comes out. Everybody. I'm willing to bet even some of the players down the hallway do that. Oh, we could win that one, we'll lose that one. You know, that kind of thing. It's human nature. You play that game. Everybody plays the win-loss game. This was one of those games that you had as a loss, wasn't it? Admit it. I did. I had this as an L before the season started. How many of you did? Come on. Are you man enough or woman enough to admit it? You had this game as a loss, didn't you? What's changed? Other than the fact that Steve McNair isn't healthy, Kyle Bowler's the quarterback, and the offense seems to be as stagnant as any offense in the league. But what's really changed? Is it the Patriots? Is it more the Patriots' dominance or more the Ravens' ineptitude? Webradio at patriots.com. All right, there's another one for you as well. Let's see, a couple of other notes to pass along. Pro Bowl balloting ends on December the 11th. In case you're interested, you have to go to NFL.com/Pro Bowl, or you can text message PRO to 7777 from a phone with Sprint wireless service, and then you can still vote for your favorite players, be they Patriot or otherwise, for the Pro Bowl. The Patriots and Ravens, this is just the fourth time that these two teams have met since the Baltimore franchise was founded after the Cleveland Browns moved to Baltimore in 1996. The previous three times have all been Patriot wins. And the last time these two teams played was November the 28th of 2004, almost 3 years to the day, which was a 24-3 win for the Pats over the Ravens here at Gillette Stadium. Now, the Patriots have one win in Baltimore, the only time they've ever played in Baltimore. This, by the way, will be their first trip to M&T Bank Stadium, which opened in 1998. So this is their first trip to play in this particular stadium. But the time they went to Baltimore was back in 96 before the new stadium opened, and they beat the Ravens 46-38. They also had a 20-3 win in 2000 at Old Foxborough Stadium. That was the final game of the 1999 regular season. But it came on January the 2nd of 2000. So there's not a lot of history between the Patriots and the Ravens is what I'm getting at here. That's the big thing, number one. But when you look at how these teams stack up, they stack up very comparably with their two defenses. Yes, the Ravens are hurting in the secondary, without a doubt. But overall, the two teams are comparable. Patriots are third in total defense in the NFL. The Ravens are fourth. In rushing defense, the Patriots are fifth in the NFL. The Ravens are third in the NFL. Pass defense is the one area in which the Patriots might be able to exploit. Ravens are only 15th in the league, about halfway down the pack. They give up almost 214 yards per game in the air on average. Still a pretty good number overall, but compared to, you know, what the Patriots give up, it's not the same. Patriots are sixth in pass defense at 195.4 yards per game given up passing. That's an extraordinary number when you consider some of the performances. In fact, the fact that A.J. Feely had a career night of over three builds go this last week.
Points allowed, the Ravens are giving up more points. They're giving up 22 a game, while the Patriots are giving up under 17 a game, 16.8, which is tied for fifth in the league overall. But the biggest difference between these two teams, while they're similar defensively, Patriots obviously in total offense are number one. The Ravens are 24th, so it really doesn't compare there. But the biggest difference happens to be in turnover differential. Patriots lead the league at plus 16. The Ravens are minus 11.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
Wow. So, with that, we welcome in Russell Baxter, who's the NFL Research Coordinator at ESPN and our guest here on Thursdays. Turnover is obviously a huge, huge reason, Russell, as I'm kind of going through some of the numbers now over why the Ravens are 4-7, I think, this year.
Well, I don't think there's any question about it, and how are you? And
excellent.
Good to talk to you. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
And it was an uneventful Thanksgiving, which I'm appreciative for.
Yeah, well, at these times, I don't blame you. But it's funny you should bring up turnover differential.
Yeah?
You know, and with the Patriots being so good at it. But does anybody remember who was the best at it in the league last year?
Best team in turnover differential, would that be the Colts?
That would be the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Last year.
No kidding.
So if you went from 13-3 to 4-7 in less than a calendar year, that would take a heck of a reversal, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Yes. Well, this year they are, like you said, minus 11.
Right.
Last year they were plus 17.
Is minus 11 dead last right now?
Minus 11 right now, I believe, is dead last in the National Football League.
Yeah, thought so.
Yeah. But that's a 28 swing.
Yeah.
Think of it that way. You know, so plus 17 a year ago, you were a team that was very aggressive. And even early in this year, you saw them doing a better job
of
forcing turnovers and so on. But they have lived and died by their own turnovers this year. And I believe, funny enough, it's Monday Night Football. And the Baltimore Ravens committed 28 turnovers in their 11 games this year, which is five more than they did all of last season.
Wow.
10 of those, for some reason, has come on the glare of Monday Night Football. Six in the opening day loss to the Bengals. Last time they were on that little rainy night in Pittsburgh, they could cough it up four times. Very simple. They have three turnovers in their four wins, and they have 25 turnovers in the seven games they've lost this year, John.
Ooh. Wow.
That is a hefty number.
Do we attribute this all explicitly to their inaccuracies and their ineptitude, relatively speaking, on offense?
It seems to me this year, for whatever reason, that when Steve McNair was in there, he just did not do a very good job of taking care of the football. And I think sometimes...
He's got 10 fumbles himself.
Well, yeah. Eight fumbles, seven lost, tacked that on with four interceptions. There's 11 turnovers right there. That's a pretty hefty total for a guy who is not play. I mean, how many times did you see him get run out of the pocket and the ball came out? And, you know, very un-McNair-like, to be honest with you, because he was never a high turnover guy. You think of guys who were, you know, not just the interception guys, but the fumble guys. Dante Culpepper comes to mind, who would throw a share of interceptions but also fumble a lot. Kerry Collins one year really had fumble-itis as well. But, you know, it's not the saying that Steve McNair didn't throw his share of interceptions, but I would never consider him a guy who – there have always been your share of quarterbacks. Mark Rippon comes to mind, not to, you know, put down Mark Rippon, but there are guys who when they get hit, it's almost certain the ball is going to come out. And I don't know if that's pocket presence or what that is. You saw it with Jason Campbell this year. Jason Campbell got you know, the three times he got sacked by Mike Rabel, I believe he fumbled the ball every time. Some guys can get sacked and not, you know, fumble a ball. Jeff Hostetler comes to mind in a very pivotal safety that didn't turn into a touchdown in the Super Bowl a long time ago. So it's all right to get sacked, but as long as you don't cough up the football in the process. Tom Brady's been sacked, not a lot this year, but when he has, it's not like he has coughed up the football. I think he did it once in the Dallas game, but it's not like, you know, they got a lot of heat on him last Sunday night. They did sack him three times. But it wasn't like the ball was popping out left and right. And, you know, you just got to take care of the football. Everybody's going to get hit. Just a matter of hanging on to the ball when you do get hit.
Well, I guess they don't have that Steve McNair holding on to the football problem to worry
about. Well, how many times did you see it? That Monday night game against Pittsburgh was evident. But both games against the Bengals this year, I want to say they coughed it up. I want to say they had six turnovers, I think, in each Bengals loss this year. And there's a team that lives and dies by a turnover, but it just seemed like even when he's when McNair would be running and the ball would be down by his side, it somehow would get knocked out of his hand and so on. And no, this is a huge disappointment for a team. Now, I was one who was not big on the Ravens coming into the year because it seemed to me they ran out of gas at the end of last season. And I get the feeling this is a team that's going to undergo a little bit of an overhaul in this off season, and that'll be an interesting overhaul considering how much in terms of draft picks they gave up last year and this year coming up. I believe they owe the Buffalo Bills a third-round pick this year, still in compensation for Willis McGahee. It's a team that's always built through the draft, John, as you well know, and done it excellently. You know, you go back and look at their first-round draft picks in their history. A lot of them still with the club. You know, their first two picks in their history were Jonathan Ogden and Ray Lewis, and they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age of free agency, that's very kind of rare.
Yes, it is.
Ed Reed, Todd Heap, Chris McAllister. These are all former first-round picks. Always done very, very well for him. They've always drafted well. The funny thing is, the one guy who they drafted quite late was a guy named Derek Anderson,
mm-hmm.
who they kind of cast off.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the year right now he's having with the Cleveland Browns, who have swept the Baltimore Ravens this year. That's a thing that's really got to be eating at.
Think they could use him a little now?
Excuse me?
Think they could use him a little bit now?
Well, absolutely. And that's one thing of all the numbers with the Ravens this year, their turnovers, their points allowed, et cetera, there's one number that really jumps out to me. They are, and it doesn't apply this week because they're playing the Patriots. They are 0-5 in the division this year.
Wow.
Swept by the Bengals, swept by the Browns, already beaten by the Steelers. They closed the season with Pittsburgh at Baltimore, which could be a meaningful game depending on how the Browns and Steelers duel for the AFC North title down the stretch here.
Mm-hmm.
But 0-5 in the division. That's quite a fall off.
That is quite a fall off. All right, we'll get to a little bit more on game on Monday night, since that's the ESPN game, and we'll
how convenient for
very,
you this week.
Very, very convenient. Exactly.
You know, you get to plug the product, and yet at the same time, take care of your own network.
It really works out very well. Although I must admit, through no fault of your own, we're all a little tired of night games around here.
Well, you know, it's lose a game.
You're telling me
they won't put you on anymore.
That's what it's going to take, huh?
Here's the thing: I think the nighttime thing is starting to run out because I believe the limit is 6.
Yes.
On primetime. And I think that includes the games that are already scheduled. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, I believe that's
so we know that the Patriots are playing a Saturday night game, the last game of the year.
Right.
We have seen them on, this is their second Monday night game.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, how many Sunday night games have we seen them on Thursday? So this is it for them, I believe.
Yes, this is it.
This is it?
This is
along
it.
With the Saturday night the schedule. So in other words, they're out of the flex market.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
of course, they're going to play next week when it's a little dark anyway because the game with Pittsburgh was moved to 4:15.
It was, so it could be the second half of the doubleheader, I guess.
Exactly, and of course, when they get to the playoffs, because as we factually know, they are in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
okay, they'll be playing at night as well. So,
thanks for that, by the way.
I'm just throwing it out. Hey,
you got to be a little bit weary only because it's our third in a row here. So that's why.
People forget, but I know you don't.
Yep.
One of the reasons that now all of the games in the playoffs are at night has a lot to do with the Tuck game.
Really?
The success of the Tuck game.
Why is that?
Well, you remember the backdrop and the snowing and it was earlier this decade that the league kind of experimented with, you know, a couple of night playoff games. Now, of course, all the playoff games have been pushed further. Remember, they only did that, I think, the first couple of years, not everything was late. Now everything is later. So it's kind of different. From what I ever understood is I think the league was always looking for that wintry, you know, the backdrop of the New England-Oakland divisional playoff game in 2001 is great because it's what you really envision in terms of a winter NFL playoff game. The mm-hmm. snow coming down, the fans into it, a crazy play, one of the great kicks of all time, and then it going into overtime. So it has a mystique to it, the Tuck game. You know, I'm sure the Raiders agree with that. I don't think if the word mystique is what they would use, but you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think once, I mean, I have to go back and look at the actual time, but my understanding was you kind of got the sense from the league that that game that night really proved that. I don't think the league really knew that putting all the playoff games later in the day was going to be a success. Okay? Because what are football fans more than anything else, John, as you know, creatures of habit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, it's so funny. I'm one of those guys, and I'm sure I wasn't alone. You know, when Fox got the NFC package in 1993, I think I spent the next 8 years still referring to the games on CBS, the NFC games.
Right.
And the AFC games were still on NBC. Boy, was I confused for 8 years.
I know. But we all have been, yes.
But if you grew up that way, to me, it's still, even though I work for the network, it's still weird that Monday Night Football is on ESPN instead of ABC.
That's true.
But that's you know, we're getting old.
Yes, I know.
We're getting old.
It's called because we're setting our
by
race.
The moment here.
I know. By the way, the six night games on the schedule we had September 16th, San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
October 1st, Cincinnati. The Monday night game. November 18th, Buffalo. Obviously, last week against the Eagles.
Right.
This week against the Ravens. So you're talking 3 weeks in a row, which is
right.
kind
and then, of
unusual.
The Giant game,
and
on,
the
Saturday
Giant game
night.
On Saturday night. Right. So, and speaking of that Giant game, which I've mentioned a little bit earlier, it's an NFL Network game. And, of course, tonight we have an NFL Network game of huge proportions in the NFC with Green Bay playing at Dallas. And I basically said, look, you know, if you're already worried about, you know, being able to watch potential history being made at the end of the season in New York, do yourself a favor. Go get a dish.
That's right.
Because that's basically what you're going to have to do unless your cable system, you know, happens to carry NFL Network.
Well, I think it's grossly unfair. I think it's awful. Because I really don't care about the game tonight, but I really want to see Bears-Redskins next week.
Liar. Well, you want to see every game. You want to see every game. So.
Yes, of course I do.
Yes.
As you well know, I'm just kidding out there, but as you well know, this has been a point of contention for going on 2 years now and so on. But as it turned out, the league is now going to – where the NFL Network is wound up getting some really, really important games on these Thursday night games. I don't think anybody necessarily looked at it that way before the season started, but that's the beauty of the schedule and so
sure.
on. And they have their share of, you know, other kind of games down the way. They have Cincinnati and San Francisco, I think, on a Saturday. They have Pittsburgh and St. Louis, I think it's a Thursday game. They also have Denver and Houston in a couple of weeks, which I find to be kind of an intriguing game, and maybe we'll get into it later, about the Texans and how they're going to have an impact the rest of the way,
mm-hmm.
which people I don't think realize because not necessarily how they're playing, but who they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So, we all get our share of good games. We all get our share of bombs. There's no guarantee that everybody's going to be great every week, but I wish they would get this thing kind of resolved because I would like to spend 100% of the time talking about Packers-Cowboys and not 70-30 Packers-Cowboys and the other 30%, are you going to be able to watch the game tonight?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's unfortunate. But, you know, hey, right now, as one of our favorite sayings goes around here, it is what it is. So not much else you can do about it.
It is what it is, and it's beyond us both. It's Bill Gates versus Warren Buffett.
Right. That's exactly basically what it boils down to. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So,
do you think that the fact that Brett Favre has never won in Dallas, does that play into this at all tonight?
Well, I don't think it plays into it, John. It's funny how these things keep working out, though. Okay. Now, admit it, the Packers have not played in Dallas since 1999, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And these teams have not played each other a lot, even though they're in the same conference. But I will just throw this out, okay? For people who, I don't want to say they poo-poo those things and so on. You know, there are stats that mean more than others. And that's just kind of one of those, maybe it's not fun for Brett, but it's just one of those fun stats, okay? The Detroit Lions, I'll just throw this out. The Detroit Lions have never won in Washington. Their rosters have changed over the last 60-something years. But for some reason, they are 0-21 in Washington.
I did not know that. That's extraordinary.
Okay?
Yeah.
So what does that mean? I have no idea. It's kind of a funny thing. For years, the Philadelphia Eagles couldn't win in Chicago. For years, the Pittsburgh Steelers couldn't win in Chicago. It's just one of those funny things. It happens this way. The Lions lost again there this year in Washington. The last time the Lions beat the Redskins on the road, they were the Boston Redskins. I believe it was 1935.
Wow.
Okay? And it was, but why does that keep happening? I don't know. But it's just kind of one of those fun things. Now, of course, Brett and his heyday down there, three of those losses were playoff games, the 93 and 94 divisional playoffs, the 95 NFC championship game. The funny thing was, even the year that the Packers won the Super Bowl in 96, they went to Dallas on a Monday night. John, I know you remember this. Chris Boniel kicked seven field goals.
Seven field goals, yeah.
Okay. And they lose 21-6. They were the better team that year. They still found a way to lose. Sometimes it's matchups. Sometimes it's coincidence. It's just one of those things. Does it play into the night? No. But if they do lose tonight, he'll be 0-9. I know that.
Yeah, that's true. It is a number, right?
Yeah, but it's a number. Take it for what it's worth.
Right, yeah. It shouldn't mean a lot. Then again, you know, based on what I've seen of the two teams, you know, Green Bay may be the more solid of the two teams, but I think Dallas... You know, I've been intrigued by not certainly their offense is very good, but I've been intrigued by what I see as an improving defense and a defense that at times is very, very fast. And I'm wondering if the speed that the Cowboys do have on defense might not be enough to sort of, you know, help shut down the Packers.
I kind of go back and forth on this one. I think both teams, even though they're both 10-1, John, they're both evolving teams. You can see them. You can see Green Bay evolve on a weekly basis on the way they play, and Dallas has kind of changed its game as well. As strange as it may sound, the quarterback who's been a little more turnover prone this year has actually been Tony Romo, according to Brett Favre,
right.
And the pack. And the one very overwhelming statistic with the Packers this year is in their 11 games, they've only committed 15 turnovers. 10 of those in the 10 wins, and 5 of them in the only game they lost, which was a Sunday night game to Chicago. So one-third of their turnovers came in their only loss. Dallas has gotten a lot better at forcing those turnovers. But I think what everybody's waiting for tonight is, while the Packers have an array of receivers, everybody's waiting to see who's going to match up on Terrell Owens. It'll likely be Al Harris. We're not sure if Charles Woodson is even going to play. But I think he'll probably try to give it a go. To me, the real intrigue here is the rotation, and they've got a couple guys banged up. The Packers defensive line, which goes 6 or 7 deep now. They bring in a lot of fresh guys. Aaron Kampman, for people who thought him going to a Pro Bowl last year was fluky, he might be even having a better year this year. He is a real stud on the defensive end, as is Cullen Jenkins. This is a great battle in the trenches tonight, and I think that's going to dictate what exactly Al Harris could do with Terrell Owens.
It's a matchup that I'm definitely looking forward to. For Sunday's games, a couple of them that kind of stand out to me. Number one, a little bit under the radar, and I guess it's only because both teams struggled of late, particularly Tennessee. But Tennessee playing at home against Houston, the survivor of this one, the winner of this one still is very much in the thick of things, I think, for a wild card spot. The loser, well, if it's Houston, they're done. If it's Tennessee, they're probably done, only because it would be, what, 4 losses in a row, I guess, for the Titans.
Yeah, and my pun of the week comes from this. What is Albert Haynes worth? I'll tell you what it's worth. He's worth about 100 yards a game rushing. In the first 8 games of the year, the Titans were only giving up 66 yards per game on the ground. In their last 3 games with him out in the lineup, John, 166, 166, 148.
Wow.
And 3 straight losses. Now, we all point to Vince Young, and, you know, they don't necessarily live and die with how Vince Young plays, because statistically, not having a great year taking care of the football, not been overly productive. But the defense has been the hallmark of this team. And the last couple of weeks, without him, without Albert Haynesworth, they've had their lunch headed to him. And it's so obvious what's happened, because teams are exploiting them right up the middle. You mentioned Houston. That's a great segue. The Houston Texans are 5-6, and I know they only won 6 games last year and are hoping to better that. But who they play, this is not necessarily in order, but who they play the last 5 games, I think, is going to determine a lot of playoff spots. They play all 3 of their divisional foes once again. And by the way, of their 6 losses, 3 of them have come to their divisional foes. They also play the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Denver Broncos, one who's in first place, one who's a game out of first place. Whether the Texans make it or not, I think they realistically have a shot at 7-9 or 8-8. They might wind up being the best last-place team of any of the 8 last-place teams. But one way or the other, I think their performance is going to dictate the playoff field in the AFC.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see where that would certainly be the case.
Yeah.
The big game, I think, that a lot of people would be keeping their at least half an eye on would be Jacksonville at Indianapolis on Sunday afternoon with the Colts 9-2. Jacksonville having an opportunity now to catch the Colts. I don't know that they do, but I was impressed with Jacksonville last week.
Yeah, I get kind of more impressed by them weekly. And, you know, to me, this was a team last year that was so erratic on defense, John. They would have their great games and then mystifying losses. And even a little early in the season, remember opening day, gave up 282 yards rushing at home to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Got gouged pretty good for a team that was so, you know, formidable up front. Down the road, a few weeks later, even though playing better, Drew Brees throws for 445 yards against their defense. So their defense, which is the hallmark of the team, has been a bit erratic. But I think they're getting better offensive line play. The quarterback, David Garrard, has not thrown an interception. Fred Taylor is about to crack the top 20 rushers of all time and is still waiting to go to his first Pro Bowl, which is an amazing piece of information. He teams with Maurice Jones-Drew. For people who didn't realize how good of a football player Jones-Drew is, one only had to look at him knocking Sean Merriman back a couple of yards a couple weeks ago when they played the Chargers, and arguably the most memorable block of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting about the Colts is this. In years past, whereas Jacksonville's been the muscle team and the Colts have always been the finesse team, the Colts now play more like the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I think Jacksonville was a little stunned by that. Now, Garrard got hurt in the first meeting, but their defense really never solved Indianapolis's running game and balance when they played on Monday Night Football. The big thing with the Colts, as you well know, is how many healthy bodies do they get back this week?
Right.
And this was their big opportunity because, remember, they were getting 10 days off because they played on Thanksgiving night and then had this time ready to get ready for the stretch run. We know Dwight Freeney's not coming back, but they seem like they're pretty comfortable with their defensive linemen. They just let Simeon Rice go. So Indianapolis can really put a stranglehold in the division with the win here, but I think Jacksonville's grown up a lot, John, from the team that was kind of immature last year. And I noticed that in a couple of the games they won with the backup quarterback, Quinn Gray. Hard to pick a winner here. This, is, I think, is going to be a real, real physical slugfest up in the RCA Dome, and far from a lock of the Colts making it a sweep this year.
I really believe that it's going to be as simple as the Colts trying to load up the box and make Garrard beat them over the top. That's really where
well,
I think
that will attempt. And I'm in talking with a good friend of mine this morning, because of the hawking secondary of the Colts, who've gotten much better taking away the football, I think Garrard will get his first interception. Hopefully for him, it won't be multiple. But, you know, Joseph Addai is a powerful runner, and even though I think he fools you with his power, he reminds you in some ways of Maurice Jones-Drew, even though Maurice Jones-Drew is a little stockier and I think quicker. But Joseph Addai means a lot to that offense. But we've seen him plug in Kenton Keith when necessary and so on. Depending on the health of the Indianapolis offensive line, that to me is going to be the entire key to this game.
Okay. Let's see, a couple of others that we'll touch on just briefly. Giants playing at Chicago, and I bring it up only because the Giants threw up a stinker last week, and there obviously is some talk about maybe the Giants heading into a second half of the season swoon like they did last year. Obviously, they're still on the Patriots schedule yet ahead, and Chicago's desperate for some kind of consistency, and if the two meet here, who knows where these two teams could go if Chicago wins and New York loses.
Well, I'm sure people remember last year's game when Devin Hester returned that missed field goal.
Yep.
For a touchdown, which, well, that's old hat now. You know, 108 yards, big deal. We've seen 108 and 109-yard play this year alone. But the Bears' defense is a shell of its former self. They need Devin Hester in the worst way to spark their offense. They got Rex Grossman back in there. He still has a turnover bug. I know Eli Manning had a miserable day. And I'm sure, you know, there were plans to have him killed, you know, for lack of a better word. I know the media killed him.
Yeah.
Let's see if he does it a couple more times. But I think the fact remains is that that's what you're going to get from Eli Manning. You're going to get your occasional stinkers from him. Okay? I think you're going to have his brilliant games on occasion. I think he's going to have his stinker games on occasion. I think that's just what he is until he becomes a steadier quarterback. And the timetable is different from everybody, or for everybody. I expect the Giants bounce back this year. I simply think they're the better football team. I think the Bears are still kind of a mess.
The Sunday night game is Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. I'll bring it up here because Pittsburgh obviously is on the Patriots schedule in the next week as well. Cincinnati bounced back with a big win, and I think some of the people that I talked to this week, kind of think that Cincinnati might be prime here to kind of put on a little run at the end of the season. It may be too little too late for the playoffs, but Pittsburgh, you know, with a, shall we say, lackluster 3-0 win over Miami in the muck this past Monday night, being a short week for them, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, if you just kind of take a look at what has happened with the Pittsburgh offensive line and their pass protection the last couple of weeks, I know some people noticed that maybe the Jets found a blueprint on how to get Roethlisberger, but it actually started a week before then. I'm going to throw out three very interesting numbers, okay?
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, the Browns came into their game with the Steelers. They had 7 sacks in 8 games. Not exactly the fearsome foursome. They got the Roethlisberger 4 times. The week after, the Jets came into the game with 9 sacks in 9 games. They got 7. Last Monday, the Dolphins came in with 12 sacks in 10 games. They got 5. That's a lot of sacks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's 16 sacks in the last 3 games. Cincinnati doesn't have a potent pass rush, but when you're not protecting your quarterback like that, that's what's going to happen. And the Steelers, there's still this aura, and I keep on hearing the word power running game. They don't have a power running game. I still think they're, you know, it looked like they were headed about setting up the pass with the run. They look like they're getting to that. They certainly didn't do that last week. Now, last week's game was an abomination. Don't get me wrong. Okay? It was absolutely terrible. But their offense is really struggling to protect their quarterback. And if they get in a shootout with Cincinnati, and by the way, Cincinnati has won in Pittsburgh the last 2 years. This has become a rivalry where the road team wins. Cincinnati certainly has the talent to make things interesting. You know, Chad Johnson has had some really good games against the Steelers on occasion,
mm-hmm.
but T.J. Houshmandzadeh has been the guy who has really frustrated Pittsburgh the last few years.
And my guess would be that he'll have an opportunity to do so on Sunday night.
I know he's a little banged up. A lot of this will depend on protecting Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer has put up his share of decent numbers, but he's also had games where he has thrown the ball. Remember, a couple weeks ago against the Cardinals, he threw 4 interceptions, 3 to Antrell Roll, 2 that were returned for touchdowns, and a penalty away. In fact, Carson Palmer was a penalty away from being Eli Manning 2 weeks ago. Of course, we weren't ready to hang Carson Palmer in effigy like we do Eli Manning.
Right.
But he was a penalty away from throwing 4 picks and having 3 returned for touchdowns, which is what happened to Eli Manning last week.
Right. Well, that brings us back full circle to the Pats and the Ravens on Monday night in the ESPN game. And, you know, I mentioned earlier here on the program, Russell, that, you know, before the season started, when you play the, you know, win-loss game on the schedule.
Yes, made very famous by certain sports radio stations, which I won't mention, but go ahead.
Absolutely. But you know what? Here's the thing. Everybody, I'm willing to wager here that most everybody had this as an L for the Patriots going in.
Well, given what we saw at the end of the year last year, yeah, I would say at the very least a pick 'em, because these are a team. I don't think the Patriots defense gets enough credit sometimes for being as physical as it is. And I say that only in the light of we have such this aura of the Baltimore defense being the most physical in the league or one of the most physical in the league. So other physical defenses, when they line up against them, kind of get short change, for lack of a better word. But New England's defense, you know, played much better. Now, New England's defense has shown a few cracks the last few weeks, and last week's game against Philadelphia, very interesting. But in terms of physical play, that's kind of disappeared from the Ravens this year, John. I know Bill Belichick spoke glowingly of Ed Reed, and he's had a dynamite year, not only at safety, but returned a punt for a touchdown this year in the opener. Now, of course, he also coughed up the ball on a punt return touchdown when he was on Monday Night Football the last time. But the mystique of the Ravens and what they do to you has surely disappeared. And I find it hard to believe that the Ravens, unless they do it on their defense special teams, are going to be able to even score any points on New England's defense this week.
Yeah, I think the only way that that happens, in all honesty, is if the Patriots shoot themselves in the foot somewhere.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm just having a tough time envisioning the Baltimore offense and how they're going to make any hay on, because, sure, Willis McKay, he could get his share of yards. But where's the short passing game going to come from? It's not like you necessarily attack. You like to attack New England intermediate, not deep. Okay, Mark Clayton can be a deep threat on occasion, but where is that intermediate threat? You know, unless Todd Heap is 100% healthy and playing, and so on, they don't really have this. They don't really have this outlet passing game that gets their quarterback out of trouble. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And an outlet passing game, getting those, you know, guys like that matched up on the Patriots linebackers is the way you go after New England. But, you know, the semblance of offense or lack of offense that Baltimore has these days is bewildering. I mean, I know, listen, the year they won the Super Bowl, I know they won 21 consecutive quarters without scoring a touchdown, which was mind-bogglingly to think they wound up winning the Super Bowl later that year. But their offense this year, not only is it non-existent, it is mistake-prone. And those are two deadly combinations.
Yep. Yep. All told, I would have to agree with you where that's concerned. This one could be ugly if the Patriots are doing what they should be doing. Russell, thank you so much, as always. I had one more question for you.
Sure.
What do you think the overall effect of Roosevelt Colvin's going on the IR will mean to this team?
Well, I think the fact that the Patriots have so many intermediate and interchangeable parts, interchangeable is the better word, it hurts less than it would other teams. But it wasn't like Roosevelt Colvin was just a role player this year. But they'll find a way. They'll figure it out. They re-signed Chad Brown. They can play Troy Brown at linebacker. He's played everything else for that team. No? Yes?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, they could hide him.
Put him at outside linebacker. Why not?
Listen, Coach Belichick, you don't need my advice. Play a 4-5-2 in which you have four down linemen, the two outside and two inside linebackers. Put Troy right in the middle as a plug. And then play, you know, Asante Samuel, Randall Gay in the back. Against Baltimore's offense, that actually might work.
It might.
They'll find a way to get it done. There's no team that's more resourceful,
that's right.
And there's no team that's more interchangeable.
That's very true. All right, Russell, thank you very much for the time today. Always appreciate it, and we'll chat at you again soon.
My pleasure. Looking forward to Chicago and Washington next week.
Yeah, there you go. Keep talking it up, baby. Keep talking it up. Thanks, Russell.
All right, John.
See you. Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, joining us as he does each and every Thursday here inside the Patriots Playbook. All right, got another little special treat for you here on the program. In addition to, I know I mentioned Brian Billick in the conference call earlier, we do have the conference call from Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis. So let's go ahead and see if we can't listen.
Hey, Ray, how are you?
Well, I'm going to try to be very brutally honest with everybody, man. It's just, you know, right now is a very emotional time for me, and, you know, because there's just a lot going on with, you know, just, you know, the Sean Taylor incident and all that, man. It's really, you know, as a man and as, you know, someone that I've kind of mentored to, yeah, it's kind of, you know, it kind of makes you reflect on life. So, yeah, you know, like I told my guys, you know, it's not nothing against, you know, the game itself, but, you know, when you have to slow down, man, and life, you know, brings the type of issue that happened with Sean, yeah, it kind of takes away everything else, and that's why, you know, as far as the game, yeah, am I going to be there to play? But, you know, emotionally, man, I'm just really trying to get through these next couple of days, you know, dealing with his family in and out and just dealing with a lot of issues, trying to help them out. So, you know, football is kind of on the back burner, you know, as far as just questioning all this. And that's what I'm trying to explain to my guys. I don't want to, you know, just blow you guys off like that. There's just a lot going on, you know, on this end with me really trying to be in, involved with helping the situation out and just really trying to get over things like that. So, you know, that's why I'm basically just trying to, you know, guys, just, you know, focus on what I got to do and just try to keep, you know, let God work and do his, what he does. But, you know, it's a really challenging time for me. I will tell you that, because it took me back even to my roommate when he got killed and things like that. So, you know, just a lot of things that, you know, brought up a lot of old wounds and things like that. So, you know, I don't want to, like I said, be disrespectful and tell you guys that, you know, I wasn't going to do the interview. But I just, you know, the energy to try to talk about something that, you know, I'll be lying to you guys, or trying to create something that ain't real right now, because right now is just a very emotional time for me. That's all. That's all.
Might you be up for just a few questions, Ray?
I just want to make this real brief, man, because like I said, football has been the last thing on my mind. I mean, you guys don't even have the clue how late I've been up every night just trying to deal with all these just different issues and been pulled in so many different ways. So football is right now is really the last thing on my mind. But I'll take one or two if we can make it quick, please.
Okay. Well, I guess, you know, one thought we had, and it might sound insensitive, I hope it doesn't, just based on, you know, the power of the words you just spoke to us, is just your thoughts on Adalis and where that situation lies right now.
What situation?
Where we had some back and forth where...
Yeah, that guys, look, I'm totally sorry, but there's no way I can be... I done lost one of my closest friends, and we're talking about me and Adalis. Mm-hmm. Wow, I don't understand that, and that's why I didn't want to have this conversation, because I don't understand that. Sure. You know, we're about to play the New England Patriots, you know what I'm saying? I've never played against AD. I'm not going to play against AD and all. Listen, to try to relive something like that when someone loses their life and we're trying to relive gossip and all of this, I don't have energy for it. I don't have energy for it, and that's what I'm really just trying to stay away from, man. If I can just play football, and deal with my boy's death and get through this week, I'm good. I'm good, because everything else, man, it really shows you that there's really no importance to what everybody else wants to talk about.
Is it going to be tough for you to focus on football on Monday night?
No, it's rough, man. You know, you don't, when you lose someone like that, it ain't for play. You know, this is a young guy who reached out to me, and just, he's a great guy, man. He's a great guy, and to, you know, I just can't brush it off like that, you know, without showing, you know, respect to who he is and what he stood for. And I'm just, you know, and I'm just going to stand my ground with that and understand that life, you know, life is way more important than any game and anything that everybody else wants you to talk about. And like I said, it's just a disturbing time right now, you know, for the entire UM family. But when you're as close as I was to him, you know, it kind of affects you. So that's why, you know, everything else emotionally, man, I'm kind of separated from.
Ray, do you think Sean was misunderstood the way that he's been portrayed in the media?
No, of course. Of course. You know, the sad part about every incident, you know, you bring up all of this old stuff in his past, and he's the one that's being victimized. He's the one that, you know, somebody comes and does something to him, and people have the nerve to pull up this guy's past, you know, basically. So that's disturbing. That's disturbing when you see a young guy that pure and that, you know, found himself in some rough situations, whatever. But when you see the media pull up his rap sheet and things that he's been through, that's I don't see where respect is nowhere in that. So I just think he was totally misunderstood, and definitely the way that, you know, a lot of people are trying to bring up all this old stuff is just frustrating. It's frustrating to know that a young kid at 24 years old is gone, and there's no more Sean Taylor. And that guy came from my school. That guy I watched. That guy I raised, and things like that. So misunderstood, I think, the kind of his understatement.
Ray, do you plan to do anything special to honor Sean's memory on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, not just Monday. You know, every day, man, I've been writing just different scriptures just to keep, you know, just to keep my motivation going and just keep, you know, that just keep his spirit alive. You know, pretty much the same thing I done when my roommate got killed. You know, things like that, man. It's just. Yeah, it removes you totally from the world's expectations, and it shows you that life is really real. Life is really real, and, you know, we only got one. Sean ain't coming back, and that's what, you know, the thing that, for me, man, holding his memory is just really isolating myself. You know what? To say, God, you know what? If I have been selfish in a lot of things that I've done, if I've been selfish about, you know, winning or losing, if I've been selfish about any of that, Father, forgive me. Forgive me, because you show me that people got bigger problems than I could ever have. And when this hit home, there's no way I can explain it. I want to, guys, but there's no way I can explain it outside of, you know, just trying to keep myself together and just keep on moving on, man. You know, life brings a lot of hurdles, and some of them you can't go around. Some hurdles you got to go through, and this is one I got to go through, and you know, and we're and this too shall pass, you know. So everything will take care of itself.
Ray, you said Sean had sought you out. Can you kind of clue us in as to when that was?
It's been for years, you know, and it ain't. You know what I'm saying? It ain't just Sean. You know, this is, you know, numerous of times, you know, every time, no matter where I've seen him, man, you know, he always knows that he can reach out to me, you know, for whatever reasons. And it's not just saying Sean, but it was just a numerous of guys who just, you know, call me for whatever advice, whatever. So, you know, you get attached. You get attached to these kids very quickly. You know, you look at them as kind of your own. And this was a young kid just like Ed Reed and Willis McGahee and all these young kids who came up under me. You know, it was, you know, I was the older guy. So it was my thing to take these guys up under my wing and try to lead them and show them the right things, you know, and things like that. But when you lose one of your youngsters like that, you know, you have to take a step back yourself to just say, you know, what's important? What's important right now in my life, you know, and what's important is now educating these young kids, you know, to let them know the world ain't as fair as we think it is sometimes, you know, be careful and things like that. So, you know, that's where I'm at with all of the issue with the Sean thing and everybody, you know, me really being there for him and things like that. And just trying to really, you know, just be there just to let everything just go smooth, man. And, you know, just get over this week and, you know, hopefully God, you know, brings a lot of peace, you know, around not just me, but his family and the Hurricane family. And we can move on from there.
Ray, how hard is it to walk away from your past? I mean, you, the way that a lot of young football players grow up and, I mean, it's just, you know, black men targeting black men. How hard is that to?
I think the thing that everybody is keep missing is, yeah, it's not the hard part about walking away. The hard part is about, you know, they got you in this fishbowl. You know, so no matter what you do, you know, your contract is in the paper. Everything is always publicized. So you're in a fishbowl. You know, so ultimately, you know, whether it comes sooner or later, you know, someone is going to get whatever fishy or try to do whatever. So, you know, hard to walk away from your past. I just think a lot of things that, you know, this business creates, you know, keeps your past around. You know, your business ain't your business. You know, I don't walk around a locker room and share my paycheck stuff with everybody because that's my business. And if that's my wife, that's me and my wife's business. You know, so why should all of that be publicized to the world? You know, things like that. Because if it does, I'm telling you, it only creates and opens up things like crazy stuff like this happening. So, you know, getting away from your... But when you really realize it ain't you that ever keeps up with your past, it's everybody else that want to keep your past going. Yep. All right. Thank you.
That was, of course, Ray Lewis, linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens. Just minutes ago, here from Gillette Stadium with conference call and members of the Patriots media. And obviously it does not surprise me at all that he was somewhat emotional still about, you know, Sean Taylor's passing this week and that, you know, he's probably got quite a bit on his plate. By the way, the latest on the investigation into his killing was that there's some talk in league circles. And again, ProFootballTalk.com says this. A couple of other outlets are also reporting this as well, that Sean Taylor was murdered by a former friend. Now, Antrell Roll, who is a Cardinals cornerback, who's known Taylor since they were kids, played also with Taylor at Miami, told the Associated Press that this was not the first incident, that they've, quote, been targeting him for 3 years now. They say it was a burglary. It was absolutely not a burglary. Down south where we're from, there were many people talking to Sean, a lot of jealousy, a lot of angry people. Sean, he had this large group of friends, and he no longer hung out with these friends, so you never know where this came from. That's what Antrell Roll told the Associated Press. And, of course, that goes right up against and contradicts what the Miami police are saying, that they have no evidence right now, no leads, and they're thinking, at least they're quoted as saying, that this was a random event. The Miami police spokesperson, Robert Parker, said, "We have no reason to think this was anything other than a burglary or a robbery involving an intruder." Period. And no suspects. Interesting story. And when you add what Ray Lewis had to say into the mix, it just gets curiouser and curiouser, does it not? Patriots injury report for Week 13 is out. Kevin Faulk, again, did not practice today with his thigh injury, although he is quoted in several sources, including the Boston Globe, that he hopes to still play on Monday. Maybe the extra day will do him some good here. Limited participation today was Tom Brady and Wes Welker, who's been out now via a team decision the last 2 days. So hope everything is okay with Wes, but my guess would be it probably some personal matters. And that's it. Those are the only three players listed on the participation injury report for today. And, of course, one more will be done for you tomorrow. So that's the latest where that is concerned. In case you had not heard, by the way, the Pro Football Hall of Fame announced their semifinalists again for enshrinement for this next year. And, yes, Andre Tippett is, again, a candidate for enshrinement into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. 26 semifinalists listed overall. The Board of Selectors has, again, chosen these semifinalists from a list of 124 preliminary nominees. The list is 26, which is one more than the required 25, only because there was a tie for the final position. Let's see. The first-time finalists this year include linebacker Ricky Jackson and defensive tackle Cortez Kennedy. Each of the remaining nominees has been on the semifinal list at least once prior to this year, which, of course, includes Andre Tippett. It will be reduced by a mail ballot. This list of 26 will be reduced by a mail ballot to 15 modern-era candidates. Now, Tippett did make that list of 15 last year, if I'm not mistaken. He made the list of 15 last year, but unfortunately did not make the final cut. The list this year will increase to 17 finalist nominees, with the inclusion of two recommended candidates of the Hall of Fame's Seniors Committee. The two Seniors Committee nominees are Marshall Goldberg and Emmett Thomas. Goldberg played for the Chicago Cardinals back in the 1930s and 40s. Thomas played from 1966 to 78, was a cornerback with the Kansas City Chiefs. So they have already been included because the Seniors Committee wants them in, and then the modern era vote will include 15 more finalists, and those finalists will be announced in mid-January. So obviously they're off and running, and good luck again to Andre Tippett, and hopefully he can make that final list again and hopefully get his induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which would definitely be deserved. All right, so we're going to wrap it up today, at least, because we're approaching the end of the 3 o'clock hour, and we're going to give you another listen into what makes the Baltimore Ravens tick. Brian Billick has been, shall we say, one of the more vocal head coaches in the National Football League. Some would say he's vocal to a point of conceit. Others would say he's nothing but pure show, and others think he's a brilliant tactician and a very good football coach. And maybe somewhere, as is the case usually in all instances, maybe somewhere the answer lies in the middle. What do you think? At any rate, we'll let you listen in to Baltimore Ravens head coach Brian Billick. And then, of course, next week we're on the Monday night football schedule. I did this. Yeah, I got that already. Yeah, I did that. We'll get into the Monday Night Football schedule because of the Patriots playing on Monday, so Patriots Monday programming next week will be on Tuesday. So we'll be back with you for our next edition of Patriots Playbook next Wednesday and Thursday as we talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers and recap the game with the Baltimore Ravens. Here is Ravens head coach Brian Billick.
Hello.
Hey,
hi,
coach.
How you
doing? Belichick has been raving about Ed Reed the last couple of days, and Tom Brady joked that he wanted to adopt him. Does he really have a Superman cape underneath his pads, or you know, how do you describe?
He's a special player. Since the day that Ed got here, it feels like he's been here forever. Like he's a 12-year, 15-year vet because he's been so productive and such a leader on this team from the day he got here. You forget really what a young player he is. And, you know, no question what he's been able to do and the way he's been able to impact our defense.
Brian, can you just talk about the challenge of Monday night and facing this Patriots team?
Exciting. You know, this is exactly what this team needs. Obviously, this year hasn't been what we had hoped it would be for a lot of different reasons. And to play what is not even arguably the best team in the league. I have not seen a team this good in a long time, and so that's just the challenge that our players need to take on what is the best team in the league and see how we can fare.
What are your thoughts about seeing Adalis Thomas?
It's hard to play a game in today's game that you don't have somebody coming back home, or you go someplace where you have someone on your squad that is going back home. It's just in today's transient nature of the game, it's hard not to have that on a given basis. And AD, it was a big part of this team for a long time, kind of grew up here with this team, and was a great player, was a great citizen, very, very much missed in Baltimore, and I'm sure our fans will greet him very, very warmly.
Brian, I know that you have respect for all teams and you have respect for the Patriots, but is it surprising in this day and age to see any team undefeated at this point of the season?
It is. You know, you go into the season, and I've always used the analogy, can a team win 16 games in a row? Well, no. Conventional thinking says no. But when you have a team with the confidence, the momentum, the experience that the Patriots have, do they look at it, and every week do they say, can we win this game? Well, yes, and so that you do that 16 times, then you get through it. But it is, again, as I alluded to earlier, the transitory nature of the league now because of the cap, it makes it harder and harder to do than before, and you have to respect the accomplishment even more.
Bill, it seems to be a great deal of respect that each team has for each other. Does that stem right from the coaching down to the players?
Oh, no question. Bill Belichick is a proven, you know, I don't know who over the period of time, same period of time, has been any better. And the fact that they've been able to sustain it, that's, again, in this cap era, that's the thing that's most impressive. We certainly have had a certain level of success, but over the last few years, we've been victim to, like a lot of teams, that roller coaster that, you know, one year you're 13-3 and the next year you're not. And that's something that we strive to try to get past, and we'll begin to address in the off season. But you have to admire that component more than anything else. And that begins at the top with Coach Belichick and wide out through Tom Brady and the organization as a whole.
What has gone wrong these last five games, Hugo?
Well, we'll go about that task in the off season, trying to identify it. You don't want to dismiss it to injuries. But at the end of the day, when we'll go through the analysis and kind of know going in that when you've lost the players that we've lost and been in and out of the lineup, that we'll get through our exhaustive analysis in the offseason and probably come to that very conclusion. But you can't dismiss it to that. You have to look at all the attendant things to it. For us, it's if you need to look at one thing, look at the turnovers. Last year we were plus whatever, 13, 14, 15. And near the top of the league. This year we're on the flip side of that, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But you can't give in to that and feel sorry for yourself and cry in your beer because there's no future in that. You embrace the challenge of where you're at. It's whoever's at corner is a corner. Who is a tight end is a tight end. If you got three rookies in the offensive line, you got three rookies in the offensive line. And you embrace that challenge.
Coaches thought that you need to be balanced on offense, but certainly the Patriots this year, especially the last couple of games, you know, their running game has slipped back a little bit. Have you ever seen a team win like this, just throwing the ball as much as they have?
Well, I think they have the capability to be as balanced as they want to be. They're going in and doing whatever they think they have to do to move the ball. I've never been one to believe, and it doesn't look like they are, that you got to run to set up the pass or pass to set up the run. If you can throw the ball, then you throw it. If you can run it, you run it. They have the capacity to do both. I don't know that their running game has fallen off. If it has, it's by design because they thought they could do and get done what they needed to done the other way. And they're capable, if they think they're that fits the game plan, to come out and run the ball 50 times too if they want to.
Am I correct that you were with the Vikings in Randy's first year, 98?
Yep. Uh-huh.
And I'm just curious, when you see what, looking at the Patriots from what you've seen leading into this game, I mean, do you see the same guy in Randy Moss this year that you remember in that year in 98?
Well, obviously, I had a huge affection for Randy. He, we throw the term superstar and unique around too flippantly for my liking. Those are unique terms. And he's as unique a player that's ever been in this game. I had him when he was just a puppy, and he was great to be around. I really enjoyed Randy. It was, you just saw greatness written all over him. And then obviously tracked him through his trials and tribulation. And I'm happy for Randy. I'm happy for him to have found a place with an organization, with a quarterback like Tom Brady, that hopefully can allow him to exhibit his talents, stay focused on his talents, and remove some of the noise that has followed him throughout the years, because he's deserving of having the success that he's had and not being looked in any other light than that of a great player.
yesterday, Ron Jaworski was holding a conference call, and you know how he breaks down the tapes. I guess he gets into that NFL film studio and gets some coach's tape and is able to look at it. And he made the point that in this last game against the Eagles, he felt like Randy took some plays off on the backside. And it's something that, you know, I couldn't have spotted in looking back over the game myself. And I'm curious, one, if you saw that, and two, if that's something that in 98 was something that you had to look at and maybe be concerned with.
You know, I'm looking at a Patriot offense that's about to just zoom past that 98 offense that I had that hold the all-time scoring record. And no, this team is running at a high level of efficiency. I think that type of thing is overblown. If you chose to take a Polaroid snapshot of any player at any given time, you could probably find an instance that a player maybe was not 100%, you know, focused or coming off the ball. I mean, this is a tough physical game. So if you choose to isolate those things, I'm sure you could find it, but I don't put much credence in that.
Brian, you mentioned earlier about things hadn't been really going as well as you'd like them for your club this year. That being the case, playing the Patriots, obviously there's a lot they have at stake. You know, perfect record. I mean, does that give you guys any extra motivation? Not that you need any, but the fact that this is somewhat, I mean, I know you're not officially out of the playoff picture, but I mean, this is almost, do you almost treat this game like the intensity of a playoff game?
Well, you know, that intimates that the other games you don't treat that way, or that games going forward you might not treat the same way. And you go down that path, you're going to find yourself someplace you don't want to be. For us, who else would you rather play right now? Well, let's play the best. Why not? We've had difficulties and injuries and a number of things we have overcome. But what's the value in playing someone that's struggling or, you know, let's play the best. Let's have at it and do it at home and do it on Monday night. And let's let the whole world watch. What a great motivator. Certainly getting my players to focus this week is not going to be an issue. The next 2 weeks where we can play New England and then Indianapolis. And it's just the kind of challenge that you want to have when you're in a team in the position we are right now. You've got to find those challenges. You've got to find that motivation. And these two teams are exactly what we need right now, as odd as that sounds. Kind of perverse, but...
Sure. Speaking of motivation, and you probably had been asked this question a few weeks ago by the Baltimore area media, but... how did you interpret the comment by Adalys Thomas in Sports Illustrated when he was comparing the Ravens and the Patriots, how things are differently at each place?
I don't pay much attention to that. It's always, you know, Adalys was a big part of what we did, and we all have a huge affection for him. I said earlier, he was a big part of the community. I know he was very appreciative of the things that were done for him here. It's always a little disconcerting sometimes when players who inevitably will go away need to grab a 30-second soundbite for whatever reason they choose to. But it is what it is. I didn't see it. I don't pay much attention to it and understand the nature of how those types of things are said, and would just as soon prefer to keep my perspective of Adalys what it has been, which is a great young man that I would have had the privilege of coaching for, what was it, 7 years, 8 years.
If I could just follow up on that, Ray was a little upset by it. I mean, do you think that your players could maybe use that as sort of a motivation?
There's always a competitiveness between players when they come back or go back to where they were. It's, I don't know if I've got a younger brother that's 18 months younger than I am, and you talk about competing and trash talking, and but he's still your brother. There's nothing better than competing against your brother, and I think there's a little bit of that. Whatever said or whatever the motions are, I don't pay much attention to it. There's the NFL, there's the challenge, the competitiveness, the camaraderie, the relationships, and then there's all that stuff that you guys do. And they seem to be very separate at times, and players get drawn into it or not. And I think the former is what the players really stayed focused on and what I prefer to focus on.
Brent, just a few more quick ones here. That 98 Vikings offense versus this Patriots offense, can you just compare and contrast just the in terms of, like, style, the way, you know, the 98 offense went about things and the way you see this Patriots offense going about things? Are there similarities, or are these two really distinct offenses different?
Oh, I think there's that was a very, very talented group in 98 that I did a magnificent job of just trying to stay out of their way. And letting them let that talent come to the forefront, from the receivers at the outside to the depth at running back with Robert Smith and Leroy Horde, Andrew Glover at tight end. I think we had 3 first-round draft picks on the offensive line. Randall Cunningham did a magnificent job managing that team as well. This team's different. Certainly it has talent, but Tom Brady, you can't help but come back. And obviously the impact of Randy, we alluded to that earlier, but Tom Brady... it's other than, again, in kind of a perverse sense, I'm truly enjoying watching the film of Tom Brady, because he's playing as an efficient, fluid game as I've ever seen at the quarterback position. And he's a joy from a coaching and an artistic standpoint. It's a joy to watch him operate, and it all begins with Tom Brady. And that doesn't minimize or diminish what they're doing scheme wise or what they have player wise, but it's amazing to watch him operate, and that's going to be the challenge.
Brian, your first quarters have been tough. The Patriots' first quarter has been overwhelming. How important is just getting through the first 15 minutes going to be on Monday night?
Anytime you play a great team like that, that's going to be very important. We can't turn the ball over. I mean, the Patriots certainly don't need a short field to continue to do what they're doing, and that's been our nemesis. You know, when we don't turn the ball over, we've done some pretty good things. But when we turn the ball over and put our defense on a shortened field or take ourselves away from a scoring opportunity after a drive, it's hard to win, as is evidenced by our record. And that obviously is something that has to be avoided. But by the same token, you can't play a game with your sole purpose being to not turn the ball over. You have to be more aggressive than that, and that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to try to make it as tough on the Patriots as we can. In that regard, and both defensively and offensively, special teams, put as much pressure as we can on this team and see what happens.